Hi, welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. In today's episode, we're going to focus on taxable benefits. And it's a timely topic, especially given all the advertising out there telling Canadians the best way to file their income taxes. But we're going to focus primarily on the Canadian tax implications of these taxable benefits for employers. To help us understand the rules, we're joined by Clyde Seymour, principal and leader of Ryan's International Income Tax Practice in Canada, as well as Jeff Shaw and Irene Belvedere, director and senior manager, respectively, of Ryan's Client Support Services Group. And I believe all of you are returning guests to the podcast. Welcome back, everyone. So let's start at a fairly high level. Just for anyone who might be listening that's not quite sure what we're talking about, what is a taxable benefit?
Well, Jim, maybe I'll start on that one, at least from an income tax perspective, and maybe just starting with the concept of a benefit, right? Because a benefit could be any type of cash payment, indirect compensation in kind, or perhaps even a reimbursement that is directed towards either an employee that's outside of their base pay or a shareholder. And to the extent that we are dealing with an employee or a shareholder under that context, the next question then becomes whether or not that type of matter is taxable, which if it is, then it would become a taxable benefit.
That sounds like a pretty good definition. Jeff, Irene, anything to add there?
Yeah, I guess, the other thing, I mean, everything that Clyde said there is perfectly acceptable or a good definition. I mean, the other thing to consider too is just because an employer provides something to an employee doesn't necessarily mean it's a taxable benefit. You have to look at who gets the benefit of the benefit, so to speak. If the person who's being able to make the most use of that benefit item is the employer, then it may not be a taxable benefit. If all the good associated with the item that attributes to the employee, it's probably a taxable benefit. And the CRA does make a distinction on like computer courses. Usually they say, even though they may be provided free to an employee, it tends to be the employer that gets the benefit from that. And so it wouldn't be a taxable benefit.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jeff. I think people are often surprised, when they get their T4 that they had received a taxable benefit. So it's not always a clear cut situation where something is clearly a benefit. You mentioned, computers. What other some other common examples of taxable benefits that people would run into?
I mean, I think the most common is just having a company vehicle made available to an employee. The most common being sort of a salesperson. If you have access to a company owned or leased vehicle, well, then there is a benefit. You have the ability to use that vehicle. It's available to you outside of normal work function. And therefore, there is a benefit in that. So that does come up fairly often.
What I'd also highlight is that when the term taxable benefit comes up, many people veer towards a consideration for an employee. And from my previous definition, let's not forget a shareholder, especially for those that are listening that may be part of a private company, a Canadian-controlled private corporation. To the extent that you have a shareholder benefit, maybe you've put a house, a cottage in your corporation, then CRA can look beyond that and deem a benefit to the shareholder. And that benefit may not necessarily be the value of that particular home or cottage. It could be the otherwise imputed rate of return that the corporation would otherwise expect on the utilization of its funds. So you can get into some very material areas of taxation when you start commingling in a corporation, the concept of benefit or paying of items that otherwise are directed towards a shareholder.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Clyde. I guess benefits aren't just for employees. Now, once you're in sort of taxable benefit territory, I know there are some specific requirements for income tax purposes. Can you maybe just summarize those?
Yeah, so what I can mention on an income tax side is that a common mistake is obviously a lack of withholding. Just like you withhold on base pay, you would have to withhold and remit on taxable benefits. that can become an issue for an employee, because if that particular taxable benefit wasn't in cash or made in cash, but it was in kind, then you are otherwise reducing the payment from their base pay to pay their taxes on that particular taxable benefit. That can be an issue to an employee. But beyond just the withholding, your regular income tax withholding, don't forget about your CPP and your EI, which can also equally impact the benefit calculation, and then also the matching component by the employer, because certain areas certainly have been tips. And what are the tax treatment of tips that are otherwise paid to, let's say, a serving staff member or perhaps a person back in the kitchen? And the CRA has been coming after instances in terms of the proper EI and CPP, and more importantly, the matching component that the corporation owns.
So on the income tax side, this isn't just a once a year thing. This is something somebody has to manage continually to make sure they're withholding accordingly.
Yeah, I think the question goes back to that base definition. What are you, let's say, paying or providing to, let's say, an employee outside of their regular base pay, and whatever that might be, right? Have you considered whether it is taxable or not?
And then, of course, it doesn't end there. There's also the potential for a sales tax implication to the taxable benefit. Jeff, do you want to maybe summarize what's required there?
Yeah, this part goes really kind of unseen. You know, when we think of taxable benefits, I think the first thing everyone thinks about is income tax. How could sales tax get in there? Well, unfortunately, there's a number of provisions in both the Income Tax Act and the Excise Tax Act that kind of tie the two together. And because it makes sense for the rules to be the same, you know, the one that you can think of most often is the 50% meals and entertainment restriction. They apply equally to both. Well, there's another provision for taxable benefit purposes that says, well, if an employer purchased something, usually a tangible gift or a tangible item for the employee, and they claimed an input tax credit on it, well, we have to step back a moment and say, well, if the employee had bought that item on their own, they wouldn't be entitled to the input tax credit. So if the item becomes a taxable benefit, now that input tax credit or input tax refund for QST purposes has to be repaid. And that's repaid by a mechanism that deems the employer to have collected GST or QST, if applicable, and then they have to remit that on their return.
Jeff, you made mention that deemed to have collected. It's important to note that the employer isn't required to actually collect the tax from the employee. They're just deemed to have collected it. So that is something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. I know it's a common exposure area from a GST, HST, and QST perspective. You know, a lot of taxpayers get caught off guard. They don't realize there's this sales tax remittance requirement. Why do you think so many organizations are tripped up by those rules?
Well, I think, you know, there's kind of a perfect storm that's set up. You've got the payroll department or the HR department that's kind of tasked with looking after taxable benefits. So they may be really good at calculating the income tax side, or at least being able to get the answers, but they're certainly not GST, HST experts. And so they just may not know about that requirement to remit tax. The finance department, they're the ones that likely has any knowledge about tax. They may know about it, but I you know, from past experience, often finance can't get much information from the payroll people because there's confidential information that's there. And so there may be a disconnect, partly because the payroll people don't know about the GST side and they don't want to disclose things because it's confidential. And so it can get missed. We see it all the time. It's a fairly, you know, from a GST side, it's a fairly common audit staple where they come in and they go, okay, did you have taxable benefits? Let me see your remittance. And the jaw drops to the floor, right?
Yeah, definitely. Many clients have been surprised by those requirements. And they think, you know, they might be fully compliant on the income tax side. So they think they're okay until an auditor comes in. One step in the process, obviously, maybe the first step is identifying that a taxable benefit is being provided. Maybe then the next step would be we've got to value that taxable benefit. Can you comment a little bit on how you determine that value? Like what's that based on?
Well, in terms of... Maybe on the more simplistic side, It could be an amount that you've physically paid to the employee. Maybe it's the value of a gift card. The denomination is easily determinable. Other times, it may be vis-a-vis calculation. So let's say you have stock option benefits, right? And that's one that sometimes can get companies caught off guard because they weren't aware that they had to withhold and remit, right? And now you're looking at what is the stock price, what's the exercise price, and whether or not the person, the employee qualifies for a reduction. And so certainly, you know, you can go from the more simplistic, you know, what have you paid, to the more complex, let's say stock options, or if it's something that's provided in kind, you know, maybe there is a facility that the corporation has that's for use by an employee for a non-business purpose. How do you measure that? Could be difficult. Maybe it's the effect of rent that otherwise somebody would have paid for the use of that space. All right. So certainly, Jim, yes, you can come into certain, you know, conundrums in terms of how you might value, but you can rest assured that the CRA, upon looking at the concept, will take the highest value that they could.
Well, of course, the CRA will take the highest value. That's pretty much a given. I guess if there's sales tax to be paid on a particular benefit, I suppose that must go into the calculation as well. Is that true, Jeff or Irene?
Yes. So we start off definitely with the valuation for income tax purposes, and that's the value on which you're going to calculate your sales tax obligation and remittance requirements. The only difference is that for income tax purposes, if the employee makes a reimbursement, then it does reduce the value from a taxable benefit perspective. However, with respect to the sales tax obligation, the reimbursement does not, or you have to take that into account from your obligation to remit the tax. So you're not going to reduce, you're going to take the value for income tax purposes, but you're going to have to also calculate the tax on the reimbursement. So sometimes, unfortunately, that if they tie it in from the income tax perspective, the income tax value and the sales tax value, there might be a disconnect if the employee made a reimbursement.
So you're saying the value that needs to be used can actually be different for income tax versus sales tax purposes? Is that correct?
Yes, to calculate the sales tax obligation.
Very interesting. I guess that alone could trip up, you know, an employer trying to do their calculations, particularly if they're in a rush toward the end of the year. As you mentioned earlier, you know, it can be tricky to calculate the value. Clyde, you said it can get quite complicated in some cases. And then I guess at the end of that, I mean, potentially that's where this sales tax remittance might come in. Correct, Jeff? And I guess that can be tricky too. Like, is it always clear what rate of tax to apply when you're calculating that remittance, or how does that
work? It can get a little bit tricky. I mean, you know, it gets tricky if the employee is not residing in the same province that they're actually reporting to work in. And so, you know, one of the things that we see people make mistakes on is doing the sales tax remittance based on where the employee lives. And that wouldn't be correct. It's based on where they report to work. So you really need to look through to where the employer's located and not where the employee resides. Now, in most cases, that's going to be the same place, but it's not unusual, especially with remote work, for people to be in completely different locations than where their employer is. And that could trip up the calculation of the sales tax. And I guess the other thing to keep in mind too is, Irene was talking about reimbursements. There can be a timing issue. If an employee makes a reimbursement, then the sales tax remittance may have to be made at a different time. The remittance has to be made in the period that the remittance was actually made, not at the end of the year when you would typically make the sales tax remittance on taxable benefits. So there could be a timing issue as well.
Okay, well, that's good to know. While we're on the subject of timing, let's talk about deadlines. So I know taxable benefits do have to be included on a T4, and those have to be issued pretty soon, don't they, Clyde?
Yes, that's correct. So keeping in mind that on the Canadian side, it's an annual process, and the filing of those T4s are going to be due on or before, I believe it's end of February.
Okay, so February 28th. The sales tax remittance has a separate deadline, right, Jeff and Irene?
Yes. So the sales tax remittance, the sales tax has to be included in the return that includes the last day of February. So for large businesses and organizations that file monthly, they would have to include it in their February return, which is due by the end of March.
Okay, so a little bit of time to do the T4s, a month and a half or so probably to take for most companies, I guess, to take care of their sales tax remittance. For those remittances, you mentioned earlier that, it only applies to certain types of benefits. Maybe can you just give a few examples of common benefits where a sales tax remittance is often required, just so a listener can, be aware?
Sure. Well, I mean, Irene mentioned the car. That's probably one of the most common ones. One I think that's growing in importance is employee reward programs, where the employer provides points and then the employee can exchange those points for some sort of a tangible gift or a gift card. They seem to be growing in importance because those programs are a way that you can reward an employee for doing a good job almost instantaneously. Tickets that are provided, maybe to sporting events or concerts, those can be, depending on whether the employee just uses them for themselves or they're required to take a client or a customer with them. The latter would not be generally a taxable benefit, but if they're using them for their own use, likely a taxable benefit.
Those are good examples. Yeah. Irene, anything to add there?
Clyde mentioned tangible gifts, so gifts and any trips, things of that nature, as well as parking. Employer provided parking. That definitely is another example where there's going to be some tax required.
Yeah, I think from an employee's perspective, it's always nice to get the benefit, particularly if it's a gift, say a trip to Hawaii, and then the taxable benefit typically comes along later and maybe diminishes the gift a little bit. I think, was it Jeff? You think you said, some gifts are better than others. Is that it? Something like that.
Or I find taxable benefits are the gift that keep on giving.
Oh, there you go. The gift that came. Exactly. So certainly a lot of work, for organizations to handle these requirements properly. And I know these rules have been around for a long time. A lot of them haven't changed, but is there anything new for the 2022 reporting year that the listeners should know about? Any changes, say, from the last few years?
There always seems to be a little tinkering here and there. The CRA often has slightly different administrative positions. The one that kind of came up in 2022 was their gifts and awards policy. And it used to be that a gift card was always carved out of that gifts and awards policy. And so we always thought of a gift card as always being a taxable benefit if it was provided. But now there's situations where that gift card may not be a taxable benefit, provided certain conditions are made. And the one is that, it can only be for use at, let's say, one particular vendor. And there's some other things where there has to be a log and things like that. So that's a slight change. The only other thing that really comes to mind that's changed is, and this has been a fairly constant item from a sales tax perspective for the last couple of years, is the remittance rates have changed as we had recapture of input tax credits, and that had some impact on taxable benefits in Ontario and Prince Edward Island. Those have all gone away. So the remittance rates keep changing because of that. And now we should be entering into a period where the remittance rates will be common or constant, unless they come up with some other sort of change that we have to deal with.
Those are good to know. I know during the pandemic, there was a few administrative policies where something that might otherwise be considered a taxable benefit maybe wasn't. And in some cases, there was also some latitude as far as how some of the calculations were done. Is that still in place or has that gone away now?
With respect to home office expenses, it's usually home office expenses have always been a taxable benefit. But due to the pandemic, they came out with a position that an employer could provide up to $500 for home office equipment purchase, where it wouldn't be a taxable benefit. When it first came out, it was only supposed to be in place for 2020, then it was extended to 2021, and now it's been extended to 2022. What's important to note, though, it is limited to $500. So it's not a $500 per year. It is a $500 in total. So if an employee was given, let's say, if they bought a chair for $300 in 2021, then there's only $200 left of that $500 pool that they could have gotten some money from the employer. If the employer gave them more, then the excess over that $500 threshold would become a taxable benefit.
Okay, well, that's definitely good to know. Now, I'm sure we've basically raised a lot of questions, maybe, and only provided a few answers. Where can a listener go to get more information or to find some help if they've got some concerns about taxable benefits?
I recommend they call our Tax Direct line at 1-800-667-1600 or taxdirect@ryan.com. And we have a team of people here ready to take your question. We may be able to help you with an answer right then and there. But if we feel that the issue is more urgent or requires some specific focus, we can direct that to Clyde's team to help with income tax, or we can direct that to our advisory team for more detailed information on the sales tax side.
Okay, that sounds good. Irene, Clyde, Jeff, thank you so much for your time today and your insights. I think you've given employers a lot to think about as far as taxable benefits goes, and I really appreciate it. Thank you. That's it for this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. You can find more information about taxable benefits, including two full webinars on the sales tax implications, on the Ryan Canada website at ryan.com/Canada. And if you're a client with questions about taxable benefits, you can always contact the Ryan Tax Direct line at 1-800-667-1600 or taxdirect@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.